We start now with outcome 4.3. Comfort and assist others in times of crisis, namely death, marital problems, illness, etc. Let's look at the key Bible readings. 1 Thessalonians 5:11 says, "Therefore encourage one another and build one another up, just as you are doing." Galatians 6:2, "Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ." Philippians 2:4, "Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others." All pastors will at some point have people in their congregation who face crises of different kinds. Death is inevitable, and the affected families will need to be comforted. Married couples will sometimes experience conflicts that will need to be resolved. Illness in the congregation often requires pastors to do hospital or home visits. In addition, there are other issues which arise from time to time which require the pastor's intervention. For all of these, the pastor needs some form of training, and failure to do so could be very damaging for the individuals affected and sometimes for the whole congregation. Let's look at death. Let's begin with the most challenging, death. A useful book entitled Answers to Pastor's Questions by Howard F. Sugden and Warren W. Wiersbe provides very helpful information for pastors about this sensitive topic. Here's a summary of the key points they make in the chapter about deaths and funerals. Don't ever tell jokes about death or funerals in public meetings of the church. Contact the family as soon as you hear about death in a church family. Phone first to see if it is okay to visit. Once you have arrived, try to have a quiet ministry. A talkative, loud pastor is going to do more harm than good. Then express your sympathy and be available to listen and help. Offer to read a passage from the Bible and pray, and do it from the heart. At your next meeting, when you meet to arrange the funeral, let the closest relative to the deceased have the final say about time, place, and music. Ask if there is a favorite passage from the Bible to read. The funeral service should not be long, and the sermon should focus on one comforting truth. There is no time for a doctrinal exegesis on death or resurrection. You're applying balm to broken hearts, so be tender. The authors discourage a heavy heaven and hell type sermon, but say that you should always give assurance that anyone who trusts Jesus Christ is saved. But that is unwise to delay that decision. Follow up with a visit as soon as possible after the funeral and respond to signs of emotional problems and possible family disagreements. The authors end this section with a very wise piece of advice. Your regular pastoral ministry week after week helps to prepare people for the hour of sorrow. Preach as a dying man to dying people, and when death visits the flock, both you and your people will be prepared. Dear facilitator, it may not be possible to watch your students actually conduct a funeral, but they must be able to describe the process well. Next, marriage and divorce. In the next outcome, we'll deal with preparing a couple for marriage, but in this one, we will focus on marital conflict. All marriages will experience conflict at some stage. For some, it is a disagreement on some issue, often money, but it may be far worse, even to the point where one partner threatens divorce. Let us assume that they come to you for counseling. How should you go about it? I found a useful article entitled The Basics of Counseling Marriage Problems by Julie Ganshaw, which I encourage you to read in full. But here I will provide a brief summary. God established the institution of marriage in the Garden of Eden, but because marriage is so fundamental to a functioning society, Satan actively seeks to destroy marriages. Ganshaw is correct when she says Ephesians 5 is the key passage on marriage and describes the marital relationship as representative of the relationship Christ has with the church. As Christ treats the church with love and grace, the husband and wife must follow his example and treat each other the same way. Seeing marriage problems. Conflicts in marriages can result from faulty examples in their own families of what a good marriage should look like, or perhaps the couple has the wrong idea about marriage, or has received advice from friends who do not understand the biblical principles of marriage and reconciliation. They might want to repent and change, but they do not know how. On the other hand, says Ganshaw, many couples deal with their problems by avoiding them, running away from the issues, and pretending they somehow don't exist or will disappear with time. The issues are not resolved, sin is not confessed, and no request or offer of forgiveness is made. Yet the problems are expected to fade away as time rolls on. However, time is not a magic formula. Letting time go by does nothing to resolve the problems and solves nothing. Many problems come to counseling wrongly, believing that a marriage in trouble can be patched up. God does not call us to cover up our problems, but to solve them biblically. Christ is more than enough and provides more than enough grace for transforming a lousy marriage into one that glorifies God. Therefore, the couple should not settle for anything less than a marriage that is transformed by the power and grace of God. Next time, we will look at the counselor's role.